So we take a few minutes for questions and comments. How was it for you to begin to include the body as part of the meditation? Did that help or difficult?
What was extraordinary for me is to realize that this is the body I have. I mean, I felt like it was a calliope. I have never felt such discomfort. Mind to itch and tear off my sweater. And really, I mean, and just because my attention, I allowed my attention to include it.
To feel your body, and there's all this stuff going on that you weren't aware of. Now, you know, it's interesting. I've spent some time in the last couple of weeks with two friends who are members of our Sangha, or community that sits together, who are dying. And both of them, fortunately, are not in a lot of pain. One has cancer and been sick for a lot of years and healed herself for a long time. It's time to die. She's ready. And the other has AIDS, and he's had it for 5 years. He's known it and going through a process. They're both pretty restless. They're not in much pain. But there's a lot else going on in their body. And what we work with, in part, is what they've learned in meditation about how to be with their body, even though it's less comfortable and more restless. And it's serving them very well, I can tell you, although it's still not always easy. Other people, please.
Oh, I noticed what she said about talking about our disposition towards wanting to feel good things instead of feeling bad. When I would feel pain and I would focus on that, when it would go away, it would be like, oh, that's good. Now it's better to feel this feeling than it was to feel the other feeling.
Yeah, you can see how strong that habit is. And it's natural in a way that we're attracted to pain and push away pleasure. But what it does as it builds up is it makes our life way out of balance. We can't stay centered. Now, there's a secret teaching that you need to receive at this point. I thank you for bringing up what you did about working with painful sensations when they come in the body. When you pay attention to them, they will do one of three things. They will go away, they will stay the same for a while, or they will get worse. And that's not your job. Your job, as you point out, is just to be with it and let it come as it comes and go as it goes. And sometimes it'll be pleasant and sometimes it won't. Please.
Well, I noticed that I definitely had something else to pay attention to other than, you know, I mean, my mind could race now in an appropriate way. Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking about all the things that I should have done or could have done or should do or have to do, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, I mean, I noticed that there's still a lot of activity, but that I can channel it in a way that at least at this moment is acceptable.
So it gave your mind, the busy mind, something more to pay attention to in some way by feeling the body. In fact, some people find that after they've sat, I teach many 10-day retreats with hundreds of people who come to them, that after a few days of sitting and being with their mind and their body, there'll be times when they wish that their knee would hurt so that they don't have to watch their mind do everything that it's doing yet one more hour. Not because the pain is all that exciting, but it's better than being aware of what goes on in their minds. It's really funny. Anyone else? Breath, body, please.
I notice that as I'm able to follow my breath for longer periods of time, I have this sort of like energy surges that feel really pleasant and really good. And as that increases, I tend to become uncomfortable with it. And I think, as you said, that the stillness, it's not something I'm used to, and even though it's pleasurable, it's frightening.
It's scary. So you sit and you have energy releases that start to build up, and they can come in many forms. Sometimes it will feel inwardly like there's just a tingling or a thrill or some rapture. And if you're not used to that, that's scary, and your mind will start thinking so it doesn't have to feel it and feel how out of control the body is. But guess what? Its heart is doing it itself. Its liver is doing it itself already. You know, it's breathing itself most of the time. It is. It runs itself. But it's scary to recognize that. Or there may be even more powerful releases. Certain times your body will shake, or your shoulders or things will move spontaneously. And if you've never experienced that, that also can be frightening, like you're losing control of yourself. I sat in one very long retreat I did for more than a year in one room where I just sat and walked for a year with this teacher I'd see every couple of days for 15 minutes for instruction. The rest of the time I was just alone, and I would sit for an hour and then walk for an hour, and the whole instruction was just to pay attention to what happened. I saw everything. You name it, it was there. But anyway, at one point, a lot of energy released, and my arms started to flap like a chicken, like this, or whatever it was. And I couldn't stop them for about a day and a half. I just sat there flapping away, you know, and pushed them down, and then they do that. And I don't know what I was in whatever life, or even if I believe in that, but there was something going on anyway. You know, and then that went away, and something else came. There are 100 different strange body sensations that come. You can feel light like you're floating, or heavy like you're stone, or your breath feels like it twists through your body, or you get tingles or flashes of coldness or heat or all kinds of things. They're really side effects as the body starts to open. But initially they're a little frightening, and as you get used to it, you can open more to the whole range of human physical experience. Sometimes you also feel like you're floating so realistically that you have to open your eyes and peek to make sure that you're still on the ground. It can feel that. To peek to make sure that you hadn't grown 3 feet in the last. Exactly. All these kinds of things are common, and they're side effects, and you get used to them. Some people don't have them at all, and for some people they come more frequently. The most important thing is not those, but rather whether we're able to find a place that is centered, and that where we touch a deeper place of our being. The layers of tension and the fears and those things, they are there and you'll encounter them. It's like a whole superficial layer of our life, and it's important. But underneath it, one can connect with a place of centeredness and awareness that gives you a strength and a place in your heart to live from that does well through all the changes of your life. There's a story, if you want to do this, there's a story that illustrates what's necessary, however. There was a chicken and a hog walking down a road one morning, friends, and they said to one another, "Gee, we're hungry, let's go have breakfast." The other one said, "Yeah, all right, there's a cafe over there, let's try that place." So they saunter up and look in the window, and there is the menu, and it says, ham and eggs. Now, they both have some pause at that moment, as you can imagine, and think about it seriously, and finally the chicken says, "Come on, let's go in and eat." And the hog says, "No way." He says, "From you, they just want a donation. But for me, it's total commitment." For you to learn something of any depth in meditation, like learning to play piano well, or learning computer programming really well, or learning oil painting well, or learning one of a wonderful variety of things, you have to bring your heart and your spirit and your body and your time and energy to it. You have to practice in some regular way. And then as you do, you will face the pains and the pleasant sensations, the changing movements of the breath, the times when you're afraid, the times when you're peaceful, and you'll begin to learn how to work with all those parts of your experience. Doesn't matter what happens when you sit this week. Make a regular time, I'll review what I said last week, of 15 or 20 minutes at minimum each day. Morning or evening is okay. Find a regular place and sit there. And your job is to sit and take what you get. Work with your breath as best you can. Receive whatever the body has. It'll show you what it needs to show you, to be aware of. And learn how to work with that as best you can. And some days you'll feel very successful, and some days the judging mind will say, this is worse than the beginning, I'm getting nowhere. That's fine. Thank you for your opinion. Just go back and sit. So it really comes more from just doing it than it does from anything else. Does that make sense to you? I hope it does. Also, what can be helpful if you're interested, there are some good books on meditation. I have several. There's one called Seeking the Heart of Wisdom, which I recommend. I did with Joseph Goldstein. Another book that's good is Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Miracle of Mindfulness. A third book that's good is Stephen Levine's book, A Gradual Awakening. Those are a few books you might look at. Can I read you a poem as a way to end tonight? This you may have heard. It's from a woman named Nadine Stair, who is 85 years old from Louisville, Kentucky. She says, if I had my life to live over, and it has something to do with what we're beginning to practice here, I'd like to make more mistakes next time. I'd relax and limber up. I'd be sillier than I've been this trip. I'd take fewer things seriously and take more chances. I would climb more mountains and swim more rivers. I'd eat more ice cream and less beans. I'd have perhaps more actual troubles, but I'd have far fewer imaginary ones. You see, I'm one of those people who live sensibly and sanely, hour after hour, day after day. Oh, I've had my moments, and if I had it to do over again, I'd have more of them. In fact, I'd try to have nothing else, just moments, one after another, instead of living so many years ahead of each day. I've been one of those persons who never goes anywhere without a thermometer, a hot water bottle, a raincoat, and a parachute. If I had it to do again, I'd travel lighter than I have. If I had my life to live over, I would start barefoot earlier in the spring and stay that way later in the fall. I would go to more dances. I would ride more merry-go-rounds. I would pick more daisies. And in some way, what the training of meditation is about is really a training of becoming alive to our breath and to the full experience of our body and our heart and our mind, and living in that awareness or aliveness in a greater way. And each of us has that potential. It's not something that someplace else or some other country or monastery or tradition or anything. It's really our human birthright. And when we touch it, even for a moment, with another person or out seeing the blossoms on the plum trees and the cherry trees, even for a moment when we touch that, we know how wonderful it is. I mean, it's very real to us. And it's really nourishing that in a long and deep way in our life.
This concludes the second class on the inner art of meditation. Our program continues with the third class in this 5-part series with Jack Kornfield.
The past 2 weeks, for just a very brief review, I started by just speaking of my own background and interest in meditation. I trained as a Buddhist monk in various countries of South and Southeast Asia, as well as a psychologist in graduate school here. And I'm really interested in finding a language and an appropriate way to teach and communicate about meditation so that it works in people's lives, so that it's actually useful in a Western culture. And over this course of 5 weeks, we started on the first night with working with awareness of the breath and using that as a way to center or become present. The first part of spiritual practice is just that you need to become present. You must be present to win, as it said in Las Vegas. And then after centering and using the breath to steady or concentrate, we then opened last week to include working with the energies and sensations of the body, pleasure and pain and itching and hot and cold, and really feeling what it's like to live in this human body with a mindful attention. What we're seeking in this meditation, it's called insight meditation or understanding, doesn't come from putting our attention on an image of Buddha or a deity or a light or a candle or some celestial thing or some sacred words, all of which are useful in their own ways, but we're seeking to develop a stillness in the midst of activity, seeking to find a meditative awareness that includes our breath and our body sensation, and as we continue, the feelings of the heart and the thoughts in the mind our activities. We'll do an eating and a walking meditation, so that meditation becomes a way of being rather than some exercise. And from the very first night, we talked as well about the context within which meditation works, and that it is based on a ground of awareness of all the aspects of one's life, which is called traditionally non-harming or virtue. That right speech, being conscious and kind or careful with one's words, with one's actions, is as much a part of meditation as anything you do with your eyes closed. Or to put it crudely, as I did, it's very hard to sit and meditate after a day of stealing and lying. How we live is directly connected with our capacity to quiet or to open or to see truthfully within ourselves. There's a story of Mullah Nasruddin, the Sufi wise man and fool and comedian and teacher all rolled into one. One day he was out in his garden sprinkling breadcrumbs around. And a neighbor came by and said, "Why are you doing that?" And Nasruddin said, "Well, I do it to keep the tigers away." And the neighbor said, "But there aren't any tigers within thousands of miles of here." And Nasruddin looked up and said, "Very effective, isn't it?" We often, in undertaking a spiritual practice, can get the idea that it's some rote thing that you do. You follow the breath and feel enough breath, or you say a sacred mantra, or you do a prayer over and over, like sprinkling crumbs in the garden, and somehow something good will come of it. In fact, what's necessary for meditation is more deeply a spirit of discovery or inquiry. You will sit and have all kinds of experiences come, and the process is to pay attention and begin to see what is within us and what are the laws that govern our breath and our body and our happiness and our suffering, or our bondage and our freedom. It takes as well a fair amount of courage to do it. You inevitably confront your difficulties in meditation. Someone asked Ramakrishna at one point, "Why is there evil in the world?" And he said, "To thicken the plot." Okay? It makes it interesting. If you want to understand your life in the world, you have to actually begin to work with or face the difficulties, as well as those things which are beautiful and easy. So this last week, as I said, we work with, as you recall, the sensations of the body and the various energies. How was that? Let's take a little more time for questions. When you sat, was there pain or itching or hot or cold or tingling or things like that that came up? And did you find an ability to work with it? Anyone? Please.
When I sat like this, each time I did, I had a very sharp pain in my lower back, mm-hmm. which didn't really dissipate by noticing it, mm-hmm. And sort of got worse as the time went on. And then I switched my posture to sitting like with both legs back like that, and it seemed to dissipate some. So in a way, I thought, well, maybe I should go back to the other way and experience this pain. and then itching and stuff like that would come up. And as I noticed, that would dissipate.
Mm-hmm. Remember I said last week that when you pay attention, one of three things will happen. It will go away, it will stay somewhat the same, or it will get worse, and that's not so much your job. However, it's useful to experiment with posture. So if you sat in a particular way, and you had a constant and fair amount of back pain of a certain kind, and you changed your posture, and you could sit more comfortably, it's quite fine to do that. There is enough pain, or there's enough difficulty in life without manufacturing it artificially. There'll be plenty more where that came from, right? That's fine. Sitting on the floor, on a cushion, squatting, using one of these little prayer benches or something, many people find a bit more energetic a posture than sitting in a chair. If you tend to be sleepy or dreamy and you sit in a chair, there's a tendency to go off in fantasy or reverie. And so part of experimenting with posture also is to find a way that's comfortable, but which also keeps you awake. So you can play with it. That's fine, though. That sounds good. Anyone else, please?
Yeah,
Whether it was focusing on breath or posture or sensation, sometimes what would happen would be a solution, and my mind would want to think about it and work it out.
There comes, I don't know if I used this phrase last time, you get sometimes creativity attacks, which is to say that when you become quiet, some deeper levels of reflection or understanding or things that are dormant that really want to be expressed or understood will come. And that's natural. Sometimes you can spend a little bit of time with it, but it's not a very good habit to make in general in meditation, because it's easy to fill the mind if you haven't noticed. It's full most of the time. And really what's useful is to let it empty or let it be, let go of that. There's lots of other hours to do it. And instead to try to listen in a very different way without so much solving problems, but more deeper listening. So it's natural that it would have come, and you might do it a bit, but in the long run it's useful then to see that and say, I'll think you later, I'll get back to you, and then come back to the breath and the body.
So is that the idea of mindfulness?
Mindfulness is really to be aware or present with what's here. Mindfulness means to notice what's present. So with that, and we'll get to it in another week, you can actually be aware of the mental processes, and you could say, well, now there's a creative process happening. The problem with the mental processes and why we leave them to the fourth week is that they're very seductive, and instead of simply noticing that it's there, then you tend to get on the train and take the ride to St. Louis or Atlanta or wherever the train is going and have the whole party, and then a little while later you wake up and say, boy, that was a 3-day train ride, and you really lose yourself, in which case you're not really mindful. Other people, sensations or whatever.
I would be paying attention to my breath, and I'd find myself forgetting what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. And then what would happen?
And then I'd remember for a little bit, then I'd forget right again.
That's a perfect description of meditation. That in some way, meditation is called remembering or self-remembering. It's a waking up, being present with the breath or the body, and then you forget. Some people forget by having a lot of thoughts, whether they're creative or problem-solving or memories or whatever, and then after a while you wake up and realize you're in San Diego and it's time to come back to be actually here in Marin or wherever you live. Sometimes you literally forget and you don't know where you are or what you're doing, which sounds more like your kind of forgetting. And then you come back and you wake up and you remember, oh yes, I'm meditating. And then you reestablish your attention. It's quite natural. And part of the process is nourishing or strengthening that capacity to wake up. While you're asleep or when you've forgotten, there's not much you can do. You're gone. But when you wake up, at that moment you can say, all right, let me try to be here again. Let me feel the breath. Let me be aware of what's in this moment, what the body experiences is like. And as you do, gradually you can be present longer and longer. And it starts to string together more until you can start to live more here and less in the place of forgetfulness or fantasy or memory. It's not that thought and planning and remembering are bad. We need them. They're essential. But they take up 90% or 95% or 98% of our life and our time. We could do with a lot less of it and actually live more fully. So that's a beautiful description of meditation. Let's do our first sitting. Again, find a way to sit which is comfortable physically, where you are grounded, where you can sit still in a steady way. Did you find as you sat this week in general that being able to include sensations in the body was helpful to you?
Yes.
Yeah. So as we open the field of awareness gradually, step by step, we'll include more things, and it becomes useful in every area that you can pay attention. So now, having taken a posture that's comfortable or stable, let your eyes close gently. Let your back be relatively straight, and the rest of the body relax, the eyes and face be soft, the shoulders and arms, hands relaxed. Let the belly be soft. This combination of being alert or erect on one hand and relaxed. And we'll continue as we did this past week again by working with the breath and the sensations of the body for this time. And then the next sitting this evening we'll expand the meditation. So feel the presence of your body, the contact with the floor, the sensations, the sounds. Get yourself to be here in the moment. And as you do, become aware of the fact of your breathing, this ever-present life breath. Feeling the sensations of it wherever you notice it, and even if it becomes quite soft, letting your attention become soft and careful. You can say in and out softly in the background if you wish. But most important is to feel the breath. And as you do, if there should arise any strong body sensations, pain, pleasure, tingling, hot, cold, itching, throbbing, when they're strong and pull your awareness away from the breath, let go of the breath and name them, receiving them, feeling them fully. Itching, itching, pain, pain. Noticing with the same care how they move and change in your body. Staying with them until they disappear or until you feel quite balanced or accustomed to them. And then return back again to the next breath. Sometime with the breath, and sometime with the sensations of the body. If the mind wanders away, whenever you become aware of that, let go gently and come directly back to the next breath or to whatever strong sensation is present. Returning back to the present moment, steadying, concentrating, being here in this moment. notice what's present with a gentle and careful attention. Notice the beginning, the middle, or the end of the breath, feeling the sensations carefully, or what arises in the body. Be with it as directly as you can, experiencing right to the middle of it, naming, being present. One more minute. Stay very present.
This concludes Tape 3. Our program continues with Tape 4.